you tuned to yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. In this hour, crime. Later on, we'll hear an episode of The Whisperer, but right now it's Elliot Lewis's Crime Classics. He produced and directed this broadcast, heard on April 28, 1954, on CBS, called Widow McGee and the Three Gypsies of Vermont Fandango.
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland with another true story of crime. Listen. That was Aaron Leathers demonstrating a broom. A broom he had made with his own hands. Aaron was a gypsy, and he knew the broom-making secret handed down from the master broomers of Romani. Demonstration. The floor of Mrs. McGee's parlor in her cottage, right outside of Rutland, Vermont. The year, 1850. And Aaron was very proud of his handiwork. Watch.
Oh, he...
Watch.
Oh, he... Oh, look. Someone threw a doll through the window, Aaron. It's dressed like a gypsy. Its head's all twisted, like it was dead. And see, it looks like you, Aaron.
Tonight, my report to you on Widow McGee and the Three Gypsies of Vermont Fandango.
Crime Classics. A series of true crime stories taken from the records and newspapers of every land, from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Highland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. Once again, Mr. Thomas Highland.
Not very many people migrate from Karga, Egypt, to Vermont. But the Leathers family did, by way of Budapest. Of course, it took a few hundred years to get from one place to the other, but the Leathers family was gypsy, and they had time on their hands. So they migrated. They finally arrived in 1815, and they found the country good, lakes and mountains, and a good source of fine New England straw, with which to weave their baskets and make their brooms. And by the time mid-century rolled around, the pride and joy of the tribe were three cousins.
I'm Eben. I weave baskets, and I wear a gold ring in my ear. I like to eat, and I like to walk in the sun.
I'm Aaron. Brooms are my specialty, and I wear gold rings in both my ears.
Noah, and I'm very nimble. I like to jump over things and turn somersaults. Watch. And you noticed, of course, my hands were behind my back. I like a plump moon.
Eben, Aaron, and Noah. And there was a ritual they had. There was a certain night each year when the sky was orange and purple, when they would come together.
He's nimble, and still he's always the last.
Noah will be here. For listen.
Ho, cousins!
You're late. I could have stayed at home and eaten another shard of grouse. You're always late.
Yes, I know. But now, let's get on with it. Let's have our meeting. Eben?
Yes. The knife is sharp.
Give me your arm, Cousin Eben. Now yours, Cousin Aaron. And now mine. Now, cousins, we'll press together, each to the other, the small wounds, and make our oath.
Gojun,
Goab,
Sadnak,
Sitri,
Ram,
Crocho,
Ororobas.
And so once again we swear it, to keep pure the gypsy blood, to wed only with gypsy maidens, on pain of death.
On pain of death.
Well, Aaron?
On pain of death.
Right. And remember it. Good night, cousins.
Aaron?
Yes, Cousin Eben.
Look at him. Cousin Noah is very nimble, isn't he?
Oh, yes.
Aaron, have a sandwich? Grouse.
No. No, thank you, cousin.
Aaron?
What is it, Cousin Eben?
Nice order you had this morning from Widow McGee.
Huh? Oh, yes.
I think you'd like to know about Widow McGee, as she was a young widow and very beautiful and affectionate. And because she was these things, a cruel rumor had it that in her garden often was seen a sprite dancing in the starlight in a kind of pavon to the moon. A cruel rumor had it also that this dancing sprite was none other than Widow McGee. It should be mentioned also that her husband had perished from a strange malady. From a robust man, he just seemed to dwindle, a medical fact which was ascribed to his journeys in the tropics as a young sailor. Such was the young widow's misfortune. Is it any wonder, then, that the next morning, when that happened, when her door was tapped upon, she immediately donned her finest smile, threw open the door for glad companion's sake.
Oh, good morning. Good morning, Gypsy. Come in. Come in.
I've brought your two brooms and your baskets three.
Oh, what blue eyes are yours in the morning light.
I've tied the brooms in a special way, I know.
And what black curls are yours.
And I've weaved a special weave for the baskets.
And swarthy skin. And ears pierced with gold.
Where shall I put them?
Where you stand. And your name is Aaron, you told me yesterday.
Yes.
Oh, such a name. Such a wizard of a name. Are you a wizard, Aaron? Gypsy Aaron? Is there darkness in you, Aaron?
What do you mean, ma'am?
Oh, don't ma'am me, Aaron. Rachel, I am.
Rachel.
Is there darkness in you? Do you gamble in the gardens on starry nights and sing strange hymns in a strange tongue?
Well...
Of course you do, swarthy lad. Gypsy lad. Fawn.
Fawn?
Yes. Oh, yes.
I've got to go.
Oh, but you'll come back tomorrow.
Are you placing another order?
Rachel.
Rachel?
Two brooms and a basket.
Tomorrow.
Say, what's on your mind, Cousin Noah?
Just a few steps ahead till we'll reach our secluded place where the blood vows are made.
What mystery is this, Cousin, and the solemn look upon you? Tell me why you woke me from my cabin.
Now.
Well?
You've noticed it too, haven't you, Cousin?
Noticed what?
Of Cousin Aaron.
What of him?
How he moons.
Moons?
As if a spell of love were on him.
Love? Well, then, is that not good? For surely there are too few of us, and since he is in love, therefore he will take wife, and where there is wife, there will be gypsy toddlings.
Do you know a gypsy maid named Rachel?
Rachel?
Rachel.
No.
I have bent low to his sleeping. I've heard him say the name Rachel McGee. And more.
What?
I've followed him.
Why?
For the reason of his moaning, and his order book is fat with the name of Widow McGee.
Oh?
By this time, the widow has a broom for each corner of each room and a basket for each garment.
Well, then Aaron flourishes.
And forgets his vow.
Oh.
You remember the vow, cousin?
Of course.
Then say it with me yet once again.
For what reason?
To reaffirm.
Oh, yes.
Goshen.
Goap.
Sabnock,
Sea-tree,
Raum,
Crochel,
Orobas. And therefore you know what has to be done.
Kill Aaron?
If he has love for one outside the tribe, for so is the vow you have just said.
Yes.
I will follow him and I will make sure.
Yes.
And one thing more.
What?
This. This thing I have buried here.
A doll. An image of Aaron.
I buried here. Let it be immersed in death. Let it become of Aaron.
Yes. Well, my supper's waiting. I'm starved.
Good night, cousin.
Good morning, Gypsy.
Hello, Rachel. Hello, love. Oh, Rachel. Oh. Rachel.
Your lips have the taste of wild berries.
Rachel.
Because you are wild.
I want to show you something.
What?
The broom I brought you this morning. It's a special one.
Oh, Aaron.
I cured the straw in a different way. So watch.
Oh. Oh. Oh, look. Someone threw a doll through the window, Aaron. It's dressed like a gypsy. It looks like you. And its head is all twisted. Aaron. What does this mean, Aaron? Aaron, why do you stand there with head bowed down and...
I must die.
What?
I must die.
Oh, Aaron, what are you talking about? We're going to get married.
No.
Why not?
I've been coming here each day for nearly 2 months now, bringing brooms and baskets. And I fear for nearly that long, I've been followed. And my love for you seen and my proposal of marriage heard.
I don't understand.
And now this doll. I must die.
But why?
I've broken a terrible vow.
Oh, Aaron, stop that nonsense and... Come here. Aaron.
Why not? I have nothing more to lose.
And he told her many things. Strange gypsy lore of other nights, the dark forests of Mudyar country, the mountain lakes of Tuscany, and the singing stone of a lost and dim place in the Urals. And he taught her strange songs, forbidden melodies of doomed gypsy kings, and what croonings to make to turn off a star. And she looked into the moon pools that were his eyes, and she wept. And later...
I'll never forget you, gypsy lad. Never.
And she knew it was time for him to go.
Fare you well.
Cousins, you need not signal, cousins. I know you are there, nor will I flee from you.
For I have made a vow and I have broken it, and I must suffer for it, and I must die.
A gypsy named Aaron Leathers was found in the woods a few days later. His head had been twisted with such violence that it had snapped his neck. Inquiries were made and the police decided he had met with an accident of undetermined origin. It was also noted that for nearly a week after the occurrence, no sprites danced in Mrs. McGee's garden. They were cutting Vermont granite into tombstones in 1850, more than usual, for this was the time of Mad Gerson Hayward's raiders, who swarmed across Lake Champlain into the United States to create havoc and devastation and death, only to drown to a man trying to get back into Canada. And over the graves grew the red clover, for this was the time of spring and the lark, and this was the time of the lamb. And outside of Rutland, a gypsy boy named Aaron Leathers was buried too, according to the rites of his tribe. Buried and almost as soon forgotten, except for the few words that were being spoken about him.
He deserved to die.
He did deserve to die.
He broke a vow.
His death then right.
And twisting his neck was easy.
It is right that I helped.
For what he did, loved not one of the tribe.
Is rightly dead.
We'll speak no more of it.
Then... good night, cousin.
Good night.
See how he runs and leaps? My cousin is indeed nimble. Well, time to eat.
Everybody would remark how nimble Noah was. Grace personified, jumping and leaping and tumbling and pirouetting. Some people would choose the long way home or the short way home, but he would always choose the hard way home so he could jump and leap and tumble. Well, I just thought I'd mention it. Cousin Eben, however, was a plodder, a door-to-door man, as it were. So, Cousin Aaron, being now dead, he took over his route, and it was inevitable then that this happened.
Oh, good morning. Good morning, Gypsy.
Come in.
Come in.
I sell brooms and baskets.
How dark your eyes are.
This broom now. See how it makes the dust fairly fly?
And how curly your hair.
And this basket woven so tight with willows that tea could be poured into it and it would hold.
And swarthy skin. And one golden earring.
Ma'am?
Rachel.
Rachel?
Yes.
Would you care to place an order, Rachel?
Ah, oh, I have all the brooms I need. And baskets, too.
Oh.
Once there was a gypsy boy named Aaron.
My name is Eben.
He was gentle and he spun a spell about me.
My name is Eben.
Eben. Oh, such a name. Such a wizard of a name. Are you a wizard, Eben?
May I put these brooms and baskets down?
I want you to. Aaron used to tell me stories of far places and weave spells.
Once upon a time in far Samarkand, that's very far, in a magical place, a very magical place where spells were woven, lived a handsome prince.
Oh, my.
He was so handsome that it was said that each time he walked the golden streets, a maiden's heart would burst.
Oh, my.
Hi.
Hello, Cousin Noah.
Been waiting long, Cousin Eben?
No, not too long.
Know why I asked you to meet me here?
Why?
You've been moaning.
Moaning?
Like a man in love.
Have I?
Like Aaron used to do.
How do you mean?
Seen you weave a green weed into a basket so loose it wouldn't hold a watermelon. I call that moaning.
Well, you're wrong, Cousin.
I hope I'm wrong, Cousin. Because of the oath, because of the vow.
Well, you're wrong, Cousin.
And there's no girl who has your heart?
None.
And if there was a girl who had your heart, she'd be a gypsy.
She'd be a gypsy.
And not an outsider.
And not an outsider. Cousin?
Yes, Cousin?
Why are you looking at me like that?
Like what?
As if you think I'm lying to you.
Oh, no. Oh, no. No, no. No, no, no.
Which was in itself a lie, for Noah didn't believe Cousin Eben from there to Burlington and back again. He had seen the symptoms before, and just to make sure, on a warm night when Cousin Eben slept beneath a tree, Noah, in his quiet, graceful, and agile way, sneaked up upon him and put his ear close. And this is what he heard.
Rachel. Rachel McGee, how I love you.
Then Noah sneaked away again and into the clearing where the blood oaths had been made. And there he fashioned a doll. It was a straw doll, and the resemblance between it and Eben was remarkable. Then he broke the doll's neck. The next day, Eben, not knowing that Noah had fashioned a doll, went back to his route. And what was his first stop? Good guess.
Oh, come in.
Hello, Rachel. Hello, love. And what have we for breakfast today?
Oh, strawberries and goat's cream and bacon smuggled from Canada and turkey eggs and maple syrup to sop and spoon.
Oh, good, good.
Oh, this is hardly any breakfast at all for what you will have when we get married. I have a book with things written down in it to eat.
Have a glass of milk.
What?
More milk.
Truly, Eben.
Truly what?
We will be wed.
I want to.
Oh, the banquets, the feasts.
Oh, good, good.
Eben.
Yes?
I have money and you'll never have to work anymore. You'll tell me stories and weave spells and I'll cook for you. Hardly will we need to step out of the door.
Good, good.
Eben.
Yes?
Do you love me, Eben?
With heart's desire.
What of the gypsy girls?
I like a lady with a blonde head of hair. One who cooks and listens.
Look, someone threw a doll through the window, Eben. It's dressed like a gypsy, and it looks like you. And its head is all twisted.
What?
Eben, I know what this means, Eben. I know why you stand there with your head bowed down. But look. See? Another doll, which was thrown through the same window when I stood here with the gypsy called Aaron. And later, oh, dread event, he was found with his neck twisted and dead, like this doll. And see how this new doll resembles you, Eben. I'll never forget you, gypsy lad. Never. Fare you well.
Noah? Noah, are you there? Noah? Noah? We must talk, Noah. Come to me and we'll talk.
Hi.
You made a doll, didn't you, Noah?
Yes, I did.
To look like me.
Yes, I did.
And you twisted its neck.
Yes, I did.
And you threw it through Willa McGee's window.
Yes, I did.
And now?
You must die.
I don't want to.
The oath we took.
I don't want to die.
The blood oath.
I love the Widow McGee, and she has money, and I would give you much of it. Cousin?
A gypsy named Eben Leathers was found in the woods a few days later. His head had been twisted with such violence that it had snapped his neck. It got so that the people around Rutland would greet each other with such remarks as dead as last Monday's gypsy, and such remarks as, now don't get any dead gypsies underfoot, and such remarks as, more an expletive than anything else, well, snap my neck. Which last may still be heard around the old pot-bellied stove down Vermont way. Again, the police shook their heads and the coroner jotted it down as a result of an accident of undetermined origin. Now, since cousins Aaron and Eben were dead, Noah had the broom and basket route all to himself. He diligently went from door to door. And when he came to Widow McGee's house...
Good morning. Good morning, Gypsy. Come in. Come in.
I sell brooms and baskets.
How lithe you are. How like a reed and it's supple.
The broom now. You see how it's...
Oh, I don't need any brooms. Put it down.
Where?
Oh, any place. How curly is your hair.
Yes.
I watched you come onto the porch. How with grace. How you pranced and leaped.
I am nimble. Would you like to see?
I want to.
I'll put my hands behind my back and...
Watch out for the broom! I told you to watch out for the broom. I told you. Gypsy. Gypsy boy. Oh. Oh, my. Look how your neck is twisted. As if... Almost as if...
As if his neck had been snapped, which it was, which killed him instantly. I would like to be able to tell you that Widow McGee was finally married, but I cannot. Rather, she took to dancing much more frequently in her garden, a small fandango she had learned from the boys. And one dark night, she died.
Widow McGee, tonight's crime classic, was adapted from the original court reports and newspaper accounts by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The music was composed and conducted by Bernard Herrmann, and the program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis.
Crime Classics, on Tuned to Yesterday from April 28, 1954, a CBS radio broadcast. You're listening to An Hour of Crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm Mark Levonier, your host. And coming up next, the voice of Carlton Young in the role of the Whisperer. One of the busiest men in show business during his day, he was on radio quite often in a variety of programs, and in the year of this next episode, he was in no less than 10 motion pictures. And it should be said that there were many uncredited bit parts, like his role as the Colonel in the Jeep in the science fiction masterpiece The Day the Earth Stood Still, to his role as a German staff officer in The Desert Fox, The Story of Rommel, which starred James Mason. He was also featured in The Flying Leathernecks that year alongside John Wayne as Colonel Riley. Hear him now as Philip Galt in this episode of The Whisperer, heard on NBC on July 29th, 1951.
Presenting The Whisperer, starring Carlton Young. The Whisperer, a brilliant man who, losing his voice in an accident which crushed his vocal cords, worked his way deep within the crime syndicate to help destroy it from within. To the underworld, his familiar rattling hiss is the voice of authority, to be obeyed without question. Then a miracle of surgery performed by Dr. Benjamin Lee restored his natural voice, enabling him to resume his real identity. Now, as Philip Galt, aggressive young attorney, he skirts the thin edge of death, living his dual role. For as the Whisperer, he sets in motion the forces of the syndicate in Central City. Then, as Philip Galt, uses his knowledge to fight the organized network of crime which seeks to control the fate of millions in cities and towns across the nation. Now, in the apartment of Ellen Norris, the only one besides Dr. Lee, her employer, who knows that the Whisperer is really Philip Galt's brilliant young Central City attorney, we find Philip speaking in the voice of the Whisperer to his superiors on the syndicate in New York.
Hello, New York. Instructions for liquidation of Lieutenant Charles Denvers given to Neely. Will report progress.
Not
Lieutenant Denver.
That's right, Ellen. Denver's been a thorn in the syndicate side for a long time here in Central City.
Thanks to the information you've managed to get to Denver. Oh, he's such a nice guy, Phil. Couldn't you have ignored the syndicate and forgotten to pass on their instructions to the killer just this once?
Too much of a chance, Ellen. Playing both ends against the middle the way I am with the syndicate all the time, I'm lucky they haven't got suspicious of me already.
Even if they only suspected you weren't completely on their side. Phil, why don't you just call Denver and warn him? Tell him to be on his guard that the syndicate
is... And then, when he asked me how I happened to know...
Oh, I didn't think of that. You're not going to just sit by and allow him to be murdered, Phil.
May I use your phone again, darling?
If it's for the syndicate, no.
If it's against the syndicate?
In that case, dial away.
Thanks.
Could I, without being nosy, ask who you're calling?
Lieutenant Denver's.
But you said...
I said I couldn't warn him, but I've got to do something. I can ask him to... Shh, hold it.
Denver speaking, homicide.
Good evening, Lieutenant. This is Phil Galt. How are you?
Suspicious. What's on your mind?
Dinner, Lieutenant. I'd like to invite you and your charming wife out for dinner this evening.
On you?
On me.
Did I hear right?
Of course. Can't I ask you to dinner without raising your suspicions, Lieutenant?
No.
You're antisocial, Lieutenant.
Not an invitation out of the blue like this. Not after years of getting in my hair on cases and spending your time fighting my evidence in court.
Well, that's something else again. That's business. As a man, as a friend, I like you, Lieutenant. There isn't an ulterior motive within miles of me right now. I just want to... Honest, Lieutenant. How about it?
Well, even if I believed you, Galt, I couldn't. The wife and I are eating out tonight, all right. We're taking some friends to dinner.
Oh, too bad.
Well, maybe I'll take a rain check.
Okay. Goodbye, Lieutenant.
He won't come?
Can't. He has a date.
What was the idea of inviting him, anyway?
Well, I figured as long as I was with him, I could keep an eye peeled for this Neely, the syndicate's hired killer I just spoke to. I guess now that's no good. Hey, wait a minute. I know what I'll do.
Uh-oh. Five will get you ten. It's going to end up by having us miss dinner altogether.
Quite the contrary. I'm going to do just what the killer's going to do.
Kill Denver?
All the killer knows is that Denver's will be coming out of headquarters around 6 o'clock.
About 20 minutes from now.
He'll probably be parked near headquarters waiting for Denver's. But I don't think you'll risk shooting him there. He'll follow and wait for a better opportunity.
I don't suppose, as usual, you know what this Neely, this killer, really looks like.
No, I don't, Ellen. He's another one of these syndicate men imported to do their dirty work, and chances are he's now working alone. But with luck, we ought to be able to spot him before he gets a chance to shoot Denver.
Well, you hope.
We hope. Come on, put your face on so we can get going. I want to be parked near police headquarters when Denver's comes out.
As I said about dinner...
Now, don't be silly. A little delay will just sharpen your appetite. Notice anything new and different?
In the car here? It's got to be a new gadget of some kind.
Uh-uh.
No. I see you've still got the wire recorder installed behind the dash. You didn't take it out as you threatened.
Well, I decided it might come in handy sometime again. Keep looking.
I don't... What's that? Connected to the steering pole near the dash. Well, that can't be a telephone, can it?
You win the gold-plated shoehorn. Care to try for the Cadillac?
A telephone in a car? What good is it?
Oddly enough, for making telephone calls.
Well, that's impossible. I never...
There's old hat, Ellen. You're way behind in your popular mechanics.
I guess I am.
Done by radio.
Well, why go to all the trouble to develop such a thing? Can't people drive to the nearest phone booth or something if they have to make a call?
It's not only for making calls, Ellen. Doctors driving their rounds could be contacted in an emergency. Companies with fleets of cars or trucks can contact them on the road during the day or night.
I see. And also as a toy for gadget-happy characters like you.
Oh, that's unkind. I'll bet I get a lot of use out of it.
Mm-hmm. Like calling the telephone company to check the time of day.
Very funny. You just wait until... Uh-oh, there's the police headquarters down the block. Several cars parked across the street from it. We better stop here.
There's a man sitting in one of them.
Just one? Usually they work in pairs. I only know about Neely, but then the syndicate doesn't tell anybody everything, not even me.
What do we do now? Go up and ask him if he's waiting to shoot Lieutenant Denver?
If we're anxious for a bullet ourselves. Otherwise, we wait and see what happens. Look, there's Denver's car parked right in the front of headquarters.
I wonder what restaurant the lieutenant's going to.
I just hope he gets there in one piece. How can you think of food when a man's life is in danger?
Oh, it isn't me. I'm very altruistic. Always thinking of the other fellow. But my stomach has a mind of its own.
Look, here comes Denver's now, out of headquarters.
Suppose you're wrong, Phil. Suppose maybe he shoots now, from his car.
It's a gamble. Gotta hope he doesn't.
He's almost to his car now. The man in the other car hasn't moved.
That fellow isn't Neely. Maybe Neely's hidden somewhere else, just waiting to shoot.
There. Denver's in his car. Nothing's happened.
Yet.
He's driving off. Whew. That was a bad moment.
It isn't over. There goes the other car, making a U-turn and following Denver's car.
Isn't that illegal? In the middle of the block?
No, that's a woman for you, worrying about irrelevancies at a time like this. The important thing is that the car following Denver's is almost certainly being driven by Neely with a gun cocked and ready.
What do we do now?
Follow both of them. It isn't a cinch trying to head off a syndicate man intent on killing.
I've lost Lieutenant Denver's car, Phil.
Probably a couple of blocks ahead of us now. I'm having no trouble keeping the green sedan Neely's driving in sight.
You didn't get a very good look at Neely back there, did you?
No. He had that hat pulled down. Hey, he's turning off.
Going into that parking lot of the Chateau Frank.
Denver's must be meeting his wife and guests in there.
Oh, a restaurant. And famous for their sauerbraten and potato pancakes. Yum. Did we get to follow them in?
I think it can be arranged.
Oh, this isn't going to be such a bad evening after all. Here comes the head waiter, Phil. I hope he has a table. I'm famished.
Healthiest appetite in Central City.
Two serves?
Oh, yes, please.
Right this way.
Oh, would you mind? I'd rather sit on the other side.
Hmm? Oh, of course, if you prefer, monsieur.
What difference where we sit, Phil?
He was taking us to a table 6 feet from Denver's party.
So what? Aren't we allowed to eat dinner here?
After my inviting him out tonight? Police may have suspicious minds about coincidences.
How is this table, sir?
Perfect. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, sir. Would you care to order now, sir?
I would. I'll have the sauerbraten.
Yes, sir. You, sir?
Sauerbraten will be all right for me, too.
Fine, fine. Drink first.
Ellen?
Uh-uh. If I sharpen my appetite anymore, I'll eat the tablecloth.
Nothing for me, either.
Yes, sir.
Pardon me a second, Ellen.
Don't tell me. A telephone call.
Uh-huh.
As the whisperer, no doubt.
Not so loud. Be right back.
Already?
My other life doesn't take up much of my time.
See anyone that looks like he might be Neely?
Oh, that dark man. No, I don't think so.
He must have come in here. He saw his car drive into the parking lot.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Head waiter's been speaking to Denver's. Denver's headed this way.
What for? I don't get it.
I don't think he has anything to do with us. I don't think he's even seen us yet.
Maybe if we put the menus up in front of our faces.
No good, Ellen. He spotted us.
Well, Philip Goss. Huh. You're sure a persistent guy, aren't you? Hello, Miss Nora.
Hi, Lieutenant.
Denver's. Quite a coincidence, huh? Well, what do you mean, persistent?
Well, if you invite a fellow out to dinner and he refuses, you just follow him and force him to eat in the same restaurant with you.
Suspicious nature is an occupational disease with the police.
Yeah? Well, then why did you steer the head waiter away from our side of the restaurant and have him seat you over here?
Oh. You saw that, did you?
Uh-huh.
Well, I didn't want to crowd you, Lieutenant. Didn't want you to think that I was following you.
Why, are you?
Of course not. But now that you're here, why don't you sit down and have a...
No, I can't right now. There's a phone call waiting for me.
Well, maybe later then, huh?
Well,
he is a suspicious policeman.
Phone call for him, huh? You know, Ellen, maybe he's not suspicious enough.
Where are you going?
Make sure that's a genuine phone call. You haven't forgotten one of the syndicate's killers is waiting for a chance to get his sights on the lieutenant, have you?
No, but why leave me here?
Now, your food will be along in a minute. You just sit tight.
Oh, no. You're liable to disappear, and I can't eat two orders of sauerbraten.
Oh, no? Come along, then. It's probably nothing to worry about anyway. Phone booths are over this way, on the way out to the parking lot.
Nobody around, Phil. Both phone booths are empty.
Whatever's afraid of.
Phil, wait.
There goes Denver's car. Come on.
Come on where?
To our car.
Oh, so we can follow him and make sure he's not walking into a trap?
He's not walking into a trap. He's already in it. Oh. There was a man sitting next to Denver's, a man with his hat pulled low over his eyes.
You think he had Denver called out by the head waiter on a fake telephone call and was waiting for him at the telephone booth?
I'm sure of it, Ellen. As the car went by me, I got a quick look inside. Neely had a gun, and if I know anything about a syndicate trigger man, Neely knows how to use it.
Where's Denver's car?
I don't know. Now, keep your eyes peeled. I don't even know what we can do if we do spot it. But I do know Lieutenant Denver's will be dead in a matter of minutes if we don't.
How do we know they went this way?
We don't, but it's logical to suppose Neely's forcing Demers to drive to the outskirts of town so he can kill him in private.
And this is the quickest way out of town.
Right.
And if we're wrong, oh, Phil, if only you hadn't passed the syndicate's orders on to this Neely character.
Then someone else would have.
Yes, and I know. And they wouldn't have tried to stop the murder from happening like we are. But if we don't find Denver's car...
I'll never forgive myself.
Phil.
What is it?
Straight ahead at that corner. Isn't that...
It looks like Denver's car, all right. Hang on, sweetheart. We're going...
The light's changing, Phil.
Then we'll just have... Oh, we can't. Too many cars stopped ahead of us. We'll have to wait.
Oh, Phil.
We'll catch up, I hope.
If only there was some way to get the police to... Phil.
What?
Your telephone. You can call the police.
Oh, why didn't I think of that?
Because you're too busy berating yourself for getting Lieutenant Denver's in his predicament in the first place.
Light's changing, Ellen. I gotta concentrate on my driving. You better call.
What do I do?
Just pick up the phone and ask the operator for police headquarters. Press down the button to talk, release it to listen. Now give the operator that number on the windshield.
Operator, this is JL22469. Police headquarters, please, and hurry. Well, I tell them.
Exactly what's happening and where we are.
Hello? This is Miss Ellen Norris, calling from an automobile driving north on State Boulevard. Lieutenant Denver's life is in danger. Yes, a car. We're following Lieutenant Denver's car.
Tell him to get off the dime.
He's being forced to drive out of town by a man with a gun. Well, he won't shut up.
Press the button. Cut him off.
Oh. Now, you listen to me. We're in a gray two-door sedan. License number 483216. You know Lieutenant Denver's car, don't you?
Tell him we're just crossing Cedar Street now. Still traveling north.
We're still on State Boulevard traveling north. And we've just crossed Cedar Street. Yes, yes, please, hurry. We're putting out the message to all squad cars in this area. We ought to have help in no time.
Not too many cars in this part of town. It's only partly built up.
Well, Phil, we're practically out of the city already. What do we do if the police don't get here in time?
I don't know, Ellen.
Darn this syndicate with its killings all the time. And us getting mixed up in it. No more streetlights. And we're the only two cars on the road as far as I can see.
I just hope Neely doesn't see. He'll know we're following. And with that gun, he could make life difficult for us.
Anyway, we won't lose them out here.
But they're turning off on a side road. Chances are he'll spot us for sure now.
Maybe. Maybe he won't shoot Denver when he finds out we're following. Careful, Phil! Oh, he came off a close to the edge of that canyon.
He'll probably make Denver stop and walk off the road a ways before he shoots him. When he tries to interfere, he'll just use two more bullets.
Phil, they're speeding up.
They must have spotted us. He can't know we're following you on purpose yet. Probably just wants to lose us. Ellen, get on that phone again. Squad cars won't know where we turned off. They'll keep going north on the main highway and miss us completely.
Hello, operator? Operator!
That car of Denver's is souped up to go a lot faster than mine. I better try to head him off while I still got a chance.
Darn that, operator. Hello, operator! Operator! How can you stop them, Phil?
Force them off the road, maybe. It's a chance, but if they get away from us now...
Operator!
They only have one operator on the car service now. Sometimes they get tied up on long distance.
Oh, fine. Operator, operator.
No use shouting into the phone, Ellen. She won't cut your line in until she's free.
What do I do? Just sit and wait while Denver's car gets lost?
Nothing else you can do. But I don't think they're going to lose us. Neely doesn't know Denver's car is souped up, and there's no reason Denver should drive to his own murder any faster than necessary.
We are gaining on them, Phil.
Better get down, Ellen. Down underneath the dashboard on your side there.
Why?
It's safer. Try to relax, though. It won't jar you too much when we hit.
Hit what?
Denver's car. I'm going to force them off the road. Now get down.
Okay, okay. Now what?
Just relax.
Relax, you said.
We're just about next to him now. Neely hasn't got any idea what's coming. Thinks we're trying to pass him. Hang on, sweetheart. Now relax. Relax. Are you all right, darling?
I guess so. My dignity is kind of bruised. Can I get up now?
You better stay where you are. Denver's car took a worse jostling than this one, but Neely may still be in a shooting condition. I'm going out to see what happened.
Be careful, Phil.
Hold it. Stay where you are. Don't make a move.
Denver, is that you?
Oh, God. I thought so.
Oh. Hey, what happened to the other fella?
Got banged around a bit when you ran into it. He's still asleep.
Oh. Pretty tight squeeze, huh?
It would have been a lot tighter if you hadn't come along for the ride. Guess I ought to thank you, huh? You probably saved my life.
Don't make too much of an effort. How did you know it was me following you?
I got a look at you as I drove out of the restaurant parking lot with Neely's gun in my rib. From the look on your face, I figured you knew what was happening.
Where's his gun now?
This is it. If he happens to come too suddenly, he won't be so dangerous with his fangs removed.
Phil, I'm getting awfully cramped up in here.
Huh? Oh, sorry, sweetheart. Come on out.
You would have gone on chatting with Lieutenant Denvers all night if I hadn't opened my mouth.
Well, I guess my car'll still drive. I'll take that hood back to headquarters.
Right. We'll follow.
Here comes the car. Maybe the police.
Down behind the car. They're shooting at us.
What now? That car's pulling off the road.
Well, as soon as he gets out of that car, he's going to get a blast. I'll ask questions later.
He won't be able to hit us as long as we stay down.
He got out of his car on the far side. Probably going to try to come around the end of his car and nail us. I better teach him some manners.
Better keep him on his side of the road. Better keep down, Devers. He's pretty impatient for a target.
Yeah, this looks like a standoff. Somebody hears those shots and calls headquarters. What in blazes is that?
My telephone.
Your what? Out here in the middle of nowhere? Is he going off his trolley, Ellen?
He has a telephone in his car, Lieutenant.
Oh. Where you going, Gold?
Gonna crawl back to my car and answer the phone. Maybe the police trying to get to us. Find out where we are.
Wait a second. There's 10 feet of open space between our cars. You'll be a perfect target for that guy across the road.
Yeah, you can't.
I gotta chance it. I'll make like a snake crawl on my belly. Now, cover me with your gun, Lieutenant.
All right, but be careful.
Can you see the man across the road? Can you tell if he can see Phil?
No, he's hidden behind his car. But if he sticks his nose out to get a shot at Phil... There. Stuck his nose out and I missed him. I got him behind his car anyway.
Well, Phil got to his car safely. Well, he's answered the phone. Lieutenant, look out!
You! Oh. Thanks, Ellen. Oh,
nearly. He was about to smash that rock on your head.
Yeah, well, Neely won't be trying to smash any more people's skulls in.
Dead?
Yeah. Well, I shot good once this evening anyway.
The other one's driving off, Lieutenant.
Come on, in your car, Lieutenant, after him.
He's got quite a head start.
Well, we'll catch him in this. We'll do 110.
What was that phone call, Phil?
Police calling back. Their squad cars couldn't find us. I told them to set up a roadblock at the intersection of this road with the main highway, just in case.
You think they had time?
We'll know soon enough. The rate we're going, we ought to...
There, straight ahead of us. 2 squad cars across the road with their headlights blazing.
He won't be able to stop in time, Phil. He'll...
Turning off the road.
The gang.
He went over.
That's a 300-foot drop.
Oh. You think it...
Houdini couldn't live through that.
We better get down there. Have a look.
No. I'll have some of the boys take care of it. I'll drive you back to your car and get back to the restaurant. My wife will be wondering what happened to me.
Well, let's all get back. Our food's still waiting. Not that I have any appetite left after what happened tonight. Very thoughtful of that head waiter, keeping our orders on the stove.
No appetite, she says.
Yeah, a real persistent guy, Gault. You got me to have dinner with you after all.
Mm-hmm. But I'm sorry your wife didn't wait for us.
Nah, she's used to me running out on one sort of urgent business or another.
I hope it isn't always as urgent as this was.
Lieutenant, what about that man who crashed the bottom of the canyon in his car? Any identification on him?
No, the car was rented. You drive place, never saw him before. He sent his fingerprints down to Washington. Yeah, probably another one of the syndicate's hired killers from out of town.
Syndicate? You think they were behind this attempt to kill you?
Well, it's a logical thought. I've been getting in their hair lately.
Yes, it does sound logical.
Mm-hmm. Of course, you wouldn't know anything about it.
Me? How would I?
Well, what was it you wanted to see me about, Gault?
Nothing. I told you. Just a friendly dinner together.
I see. Well, after tonight, I guess I ought to leave it your way, huh?
Thanks. Pardon me, I'll be right back.
Where now?
Just got to make a telephone call.
Look out for guys with guns waiting for you.
I will, Lieutenant. And while I'm gone, keep an eye on my potato pancakes. That girl sitting next to you knows no loyalties when it comes to food.
Based upon stories and characters created by Stetson Humphrey. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Carlton Young is starred as the Whisperer. Betty Moran is Ellen. Others in the cast were Paul Frees and Paul DuBose. Don Rickles speaking. The Whisperer was written by Jonathan Twice, produced and directed by Bill Karn. Original music by Johnny Duffy. Next week, listen to another exciting adventure with...
The Whisperer, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 29th of July, 1951, an NBC broadcast wrapping up this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.